السلام عليكم ورحمة الله ديما.
وعليكم السلام ورحمة الله.
How are you doing, my friend?
I'm good, الحمد لله.
I'm very happy to see you again. Now that I'm not in Singapore anymore, we won't be able to meet as we used to do. But خير إن شاء الله. I'm very happy to have you. So ديما, just to give you a short introduction about this podcast, I already explained to you earlier, but I'm going to do that again for the listeners as well. So the podcast usually is in French. It's called Muslim Makers. It's in French. It's targeting the French Muslim community. But I'm doing a special series in English. And the idea is to give some exposure to the French community, to what's happening around the world. Because in France, usually, we are very focused on what's happening in our own country and not what's happening around the world, especially because of the language barrier issue. So inshallah, today our listeners will know more about you and your country. So you are from Indonesia, a beautiful country. I've been blessed to visit many times, alhamdulillah. So without further ado, Dima, could you please introduce yourself to our listeners, who you are? Who are you? Where do you come from? What do you do?
Thank you very much, Abdurrahman. And it's a pleasure. And thank you for accommodating a podcast session where it's in an English instead of in French, so that hopefully there's like a lot of benefits that can be reaped by the listeners. My name is Dima. I'm born and raised in Indonesia. France is actually a country that is dear and close to my heart. My wife is French. My son is half French. I studied in a French school and also work in a French bank before. So I think this session is actually something that I really look forward to, and obviously add more connections, like-minded friends from France especially. As a former banker, I work at the corporate finance division on the corporate investment banking at Citi for about 7 years. Then I moved to SocGen for about 3 years before I started my own startup. It's a Islamic fintech company, Sharia compliant lending platform. Currently, it's one of the largest in the world by size of loan disbursement. Of about $350 million in total. And 2 years ago, we acquired a small bank, which we transformed into a digital bank, Islamic digital bank. It was launched late last year, and now we have more than 150,000 bank accounts created since we launched it. So we're trying to obviously create a new wave of or new generation of fintech or tech startup that adhere to the principle of Islam. So I think this is something logical to do, especially in Indonesia, where we have the most Muslim population in the world. About 230 million Muslims resides in Indonesia. Cultural as well as the social norms is very much influenced by the Islamic principles here. So I think we are at the right place and the right time to kind of push this movement and business. So I guess that's the brief introduction of who I am.
Great, great. I have so many questions about you and your country and Islamic finance in Indonesia. Maybe we can start with having an overview of the country, of the population in Indonesia. You mentioned that it's the largest Muslim country, populated country in the world. What does it mean? How is Indonesia, how could you describe the population, the Muslim population in Indonesia? When you say Muslim, is it like very practicing Muslim, less practicing? What are the different ethnies? I'm sure like there are so many islands also. There are many cultures within the country as well. Can you talk to us about your country a little bit?
Yeah. Well, I think Indonesia itself, by population, is currently the fourth most populous country in the world. We have such a very big span of geographical area for the country, but mostly it's surrounded by water. So we are actually an archipelago. We have more than thousands of islands. And having said that, we also have more than thousands of regional languages, a lot of different ethnicities. We can find, very fair skin tone on the west side of Indonesia and a very dark skin tone on the east side of Indonesia, like curly hair, straight hair. So a lot of mix between cultures, between race, as well as religions, although 80% of our population is Muslim, kind of influence our culture, our behavior, and the society that we live in. When it comes about Islam in Indonesia, it came through trade originally. Different sources saying different things. They're like from Chinese Muslim. There are some versions coming from the Yemeni traders. Some came from the Gujarati traders. So, but what we're all can agreed on, it came through trades, through economy. And I guess that kind of like shape the local culture, because when it comes from economy, it kind of influence how people do trade, how people deal with like foreigners that comes in a long time ago. So as a result of that, and before Islam came, our country, or it was not a country before, it's like our region is influenced by Hindu and Buddha as well. So there are some assimilations in different parts of Indonesia that actually quite having a different take on that. So, for example, Muslim in Sumatra that probably a long time ago is closer to the Middle East, the Saudi. And to the traders, they have a rather stricter practice of Islam. Actually, before I think in the last reign of Ottoman, that obviously ruled over the Hejaz before, some of the grand imams in Masjid al-Haram is actually coming from Padang in Indonesia, and other regions of Indonesia as well before the turmoil. But then some parts in Java Island, there's stronger assimilation with the local culture that is very much influenced by Hindu or Buddhist traditions before. So there are some practice that probably a little bit more local culture influence mixed with Islamic teachings. But I think as a country, Indonesia would like to see itself being tolerant to different, I would say, manhaj or different interpretations of how people are doing their religion, as long as they can be tolerant to each other, and not creating a tension between each other. So I think that's what the government is trying to focusing on while not limiting people's expression. So let the literacy grow on its own, and people can do whatever they want, as long as it's within the corridor that is set, I would say by the government.
Great,
So
great.
it's quite a different definitely different problem with France, or where Muslims minority, I think being the majority has its own problem, a different problem, but still problems between, especially in the going to the next year's election. Obviously, this is a hot topic for everybody to talk about.
That's interesting. In terms of how, in terms of your own journey, so you mentioned earlier that you work in a bank earlier, and then you switched, so you work in a French bank actually, Société Générale, before switching to you're building your own company. I also studied at INSEAD for your MBA. What led you to switching from a bank, normal bank, to building your own project, your own Islamic bank?
Yeah, so for me, I went to two types of school. I went to Islamic school, and Islamic school is pretty normal here in Indonesia. So I went to Islamic schools for my elementary as well as for my junior high school. And then I would say more conventional school for my high school and then college. So I have a balanced view of things. Understand it that way. So I would want to, we all have like one life in this realm. So I want to really realize I would say my gift or my forte in a way that is pleasing to Allah and the religion. And I realized that I'm pretty gifted in finance when I got into college. So I always been interested in Islamic finance, but when I graduated from my undergrad, like I don't know, back in 2008, it was a Lehman crisis. So I was in the US at the time for an exchange student, so I couldn't find any job over there. So I came back to Singapore and then Indonesia, and I landed a job at Citi. So at that time, my perspective is to learn from the best system first, which I think the best bank in Indonesia at the time was Citibank, and definitely like learn credit contacts, understanding how the bank works and all these things, while eventually kind of like prep myself on jumping into the other side, which is Islamic finance. And I mean, Islamic finance industry in Indonesia, although we have 230 million of Muslims, it's still being underpenetrated. Our Islamic banking penetration, I mean, Indonesia adopted dual banking system, where we have conventional banking and Islamic banking, and the penetration of Islamic banks when it comes to assets, it's only about 7% of the total banking asset in Indonesia, which clearly have a significant room to grow. Compared to like the neighboring country, Malaysia, or some countries in the Middle East, of which the penetration over there are roughly between 20 to 30%. In from like market opportunity perspective, Indonesia surely has a lot of room to grow. Hence, makes sense to create a business in this space. But at the same time, the reason why the penetration has been low is also because the Islamic banks have legacy issues. The literacy on Islamic finance is generally low, and there's just no solution to tackle the growing demand in the market. So when in 2015, when the fintech wave, especially on the peer-to-peer lending angle, came very strongly into Indonesia, so I jumped into that bandwagon to come up with an Islamic solution one. And Alhamdulillah, it picked up very fast, even during the pandemic. And that led to the acquisition of the small bank, and we became a quite vertically integrated play where we have the bank, we have the digital lending platform, we have two licenses, we have payment license as well. So we are trying to create an ecosystem where we can create a solution at the same time improving the literacy and also starting from a fresh infrastructure. So hopefully going forward, as we scale the business, the operating leverage when it comes to the cost would be maintained at a low base. So I guess that's my journey from the conventional banking to Islamic banking.
What's the relation? How do people relate to the simple element of Islamic finance, prohibition in Islam, like interest rates and things like that, and riba? Like, is it something big in Indonesia or not? People do not really care. What's the
I think it people start to grow its curiosity and understanding, especially the younger generation, because we're more critical about things, like things that we learn, like we'd like to explore more, basically, right? And stay true to our faith and purpose. So I think, again, I think this is the effect of being the majority, right, in a country, that things are taken for granted. A lot of things taken for granted for us. I mean, I know from the story of my wife, like how difficult it is to practice Islam in countries like France, for example. And here in Indonesia, I mean, we take a lot of things for granted. So I think, the old generations, a lot of them treating the religion more as a culture. But I guess when it rose to the younger generation, the Gen Z and all these millennials, were trying to be more rational in our approach and hence being critical. So I guess that goes also to the Islamic finance, where instead of just not using interest, people trying to understand more on how do I start a business but still be in compliance with the principle of running business Islamically? When it comes to personal finance, how do I get a mortgage facility that is Sharia compliant? How do I save my money? How do I invest in a Sharia compliant stock or instrument? So this and that. So with the social media, more channels to absorb information, more KOLs, more younger scholars, younger generation of ustaz with scholars and sheikh. I think the demand actually rose over the last 7, 10 years. But again, like the problem is still on the supply side, whether the banks, the Islamic banks have a competitive enough product to or angle to compete with to win the heart of the consumers. Because at the end of the day, although there's a growing number of people that concern, a huge chunk of the people are still very much they don't have a strong awareness, a strong conscience. So hence they're just looking from practical perspective, like which rate is higher and lower and which one can get me the fastest loan, this and that, right? So I guess this is where our homework is and we need to compete.
And how do you explain this rising of awareness? So in France we have the similar trend, but it's I think it's due to different reasons. It's, you know, there is an immigration history in France, especially in the 70s, 80s. So it happened recently. So first, the first immigration people who immigrated had different priorities. In general, they were from lower social classes, and their priority was to basically just make money, survive, and give proper education to their children and things like that. And now we have like second, third, fourth generation, which is more educated. And among this growing population, there is a higher awareness in part of this population. But what's the I see that there is a similar trend in terms of awareness regarding, you know, being compliant with what Allah expects from us. But what's the history in Indonesia? Why?
The trigger is a bit different. Again, we're like probably Muslims since like 5 generations, 6 generations up, or even 10 generations up. But before, it's clearly can be seen where people are really practicing, and others are really like just basing the ID, what we call it, like Islam, just based on the ID card. So now I think it's really due to obviously education, like Islamic schools. But I guess lately, over the last 10 years, it's really social media. I think social media and also new generation of ustaz or like sheikh, right? The younger one. Because I remember like more than 20 years ago, like if we look at TV and we look at ustaz that teach in the TV, if you want to get the ilm of the deen before, like it's either we find ourselves a teacher, which is very, very hard for average Joes, or we just look at TVs and the ustaz and the teaching and deen, both are very much just nomads, right? They just okay, you need to do prayer, you need to do salah, you cannot this, you have to do this, blah blah blah, technical. But I guess this new generation, younger ustaz, like they can relate better. I guess the American version would be Imam Omar Sulaiman or Nurman Ali Khan, and now therefore those. For Ustazah, we have Ustazah Yasmin Mogahed or Haifa Yunus and Mufti Bank and all this, right? So we have these kind of, I would say, check that is closer to the ground, cover the day-to-day problem that young people have in our own language in Indonesia, and they have more media channel, right? Like they have YouTube now, Instagram, TikTok, whatever, that we can easily follow and learn, right? So I guess that's really fueled the what we call the Hijrah movement, meaning Hijrah from Makkah to Medina during the Prophet time. In Indonesia, the term Hijrah is coined to be people like average Muslim, that non-practicing one, starting to stop drinking, starting to pray, starting to fast.
In
So
general,
we call
hijrah.
them like, yeah, like emotional or personal hijrah. So there've been like very strong hijrah movement in Indonesia over the last 7 years as well. So yeah, we're grateful for that, and things that we learn from childhood that is, I would say, like, okay, for example, when we were in childhood, like we're taught not to drink alcohol at work, but we have never been taught to avoid riba or interest, right? But now we know that the sin of giving or receiving interest is much bigger than this important for drinking alcohol, right? So there's a lot of these things that the new generation started, oh, okay, so actually we need to do this, that, that creates a little bit of a clash with the older generation that look at the new generation as more fundamentalists. But it's not fundamentalist. It's just like it was treated more as a culture and just taken like, things, not the whole thing. So we're now trying to learn and kind of like implement the whole thing. So there's this dynamics as well as a result of that.
That's interesting. That's interesting. And you mentioned earlier something that I relate to. It's regarding the cost and the comparison between the traditional banking system and Islamic banking system. In France as well, we have a few options, a few solutions to acquire, especially real estate or to invest, even though it's like very minor compared to probably what you have in Southeast Asia. But we have those same kind of comments of people, they're like, yes, it's more expensive than traditional banking, so it's not good. So they're stealing from us and things like this low quality thinking, that's just comparing the costs, expecting that it works the same way. Or we have also this kind of comments that Murabaha is like a fake halal bank, halal option is not really halal and things like that. Do you have this kind of thinking as well?
Yeah, definitely. I think everywhere in the world, I think there would be some frictions or intense discussion when it comes to the practice, because I guess it really influenced by the understanding, the wisdom, as well as the, I would say, the regulatory environment that an Islamic bank or Islamic finance company is operating in. So for example, for Nurabaha here, some people are still questioning if the Murabaha with Wakala is actually a murabaha, or it's just a way to get around the murabaha, right? So this is what the typical Islamic banks do here, the murabaha, the wakala. So essentially it's kind of the fitting purpose of the real murabaha. If the murabaha, the buyer would give a POA to the seller to buy it himself and then just finance the money, right? This is also partly here it's being caused by regulations, because again, like in a lot of countries that adopt dual banking system, I think regulatory environment can deviate. So some countries have a more advanced Islamic banking regulations, some are less. So it's because of that as well. And the other is also because of the Islamic bank operating operational excellence, right? It's easier to do a challah. Maybe they haven't put a lot of technology into it, and they don't know how to scale this and that. So this is something that we're trying our best to do, like murabaha without the wakala, for example. Another thing is also the late payment fees. A lot of people criticize why Islamic banks are charged late payment fee that can constitute as riba, right? Although in Indonesia we have a centralized Sharia fatwa body for Islamic economy, has a fatwa that charging late interest fee like ta'wid or ta'zir are okay, but I guess the implementation of that, some Islamic banks would use that to compensate the compounding interest. So it also defeat the purpose. So I guess a combination of bad actors, combination of poor marketing and communication, also affect the level of trust on the industry, even by the consumers, right? So yeah, similar problem happen, different use cases, but we do see some of these things. So that's why we're, as a new player, we'll try to avoid all these ambiguity and gray areas and choose, I would say, the more conservative approach as far as we can push it, especially using technology. I guess some of these things can be easily solvable.
Interesting. How much did it cost? I know that you had to raise a lot of funds to reach that point. How much does it cost to build a project like yours with peer-to-peer lending and bank with your own bank in
Yeah, I
Indonesia?
think, yeah, in Indonesia, and it is also influenced by regulation because we need to get registered and licensed, and there's a compliance cost to it. I think we have raised total around 45 million of equity. And yeah, I guess that's obviously covered the basic requirement, minimum capital regulations, some basic minimum marketing costs as well, and obviously product development costs. I think without the regulation component in place and without the marketing, I guess you can come up with a peer-to-peer lending product and have the product market fits going for, I think, for three million, 3 to 5 million USD. And I guess for digital bank, I would say it's slightly higher, probably about 5 to 8 million just to be safe. Yeah, I guess that's kind of like the minimum cost. But I guess don't forget that after that you need to obviously get best talents, and that increase your, I would say, fixed monthly costs and some marketing budget to be spent when you launch.
Yes.
So
Did you
yeah.
have do you have or did you have also hurdles in terms of in the regulation, in the in terms of how did you to find the partners and the fact that you're building Islamic solutions, is it more difficult for you? Do people make it harder for you to build things, or is it the same as a traditional banking industry?
It's a yes and no. Let me start with the no first. So it's harder because from investors' perspective, like not many mainstream investors understand about this market, the different structure, the potential. So these are very hard when it comes to fundraising, right? Because there's no precedent when it comes to Islamic finance everywhere in the world. So we're trailblazing this, so it's not easy. Having said that, what makes it also investable is also because of that, right? So investor would look for differentiation, and specifically, especially in this bear market environment, I think investors also trying to look for a niche vertical play that it hasn't to like scale that much, as long as you get for a very strong power user base. So that's probably like the good side of it. Regulatory wise, it's not the most straightforward, because we have an additional panels to please, which is the on the Sharia part when it comes to the financial regulator, as well as the central bank. But I guess being a fintech or a bank, essentially it's a very highly regulated industry, and I think being Islamic is pretty much make it harder, so more layers basically. However, I think given Indonesia is having a lot of Islamic population, less penetration on Islamic bank, and I think the country is trying to position itself at the center of the halal economy in next few years, I guess there's definitely a mode to push that industry. So we're actually pretty lucky in that sense that we're trailblazing this. So we're becoming some sort of a foster child for the government within the sector as well. So there are some trade-offs that we feel that we have to do it here. But this definitely might not work in different jurisdictions and different countries.
Yeah, makes sense. Can you a little bit come back to the different products that you have? I know that we talked about it really quick, but just to make it easier to understand, so you have the peer-to-peer lending products, the one we you started with, and you have the Halal Bank, right? So you have those other two products. So how does peer-to-peer lending work? What's the intricacies behind? And what's the halal banking, what are the products behind the halal banking that you offer?
So for the peer-to-peer, we're trying to democratize the financing for SMEs, small medium enterprises. So we source the SMEs, we curate the SMEs, we screen and rate them, score them, and we put them in our platform, and people can come to finance them with Islamic financing structure. And it's a crowdfunding, basically. So we got maybe 5-7 million US dollars per month from our retail funders, retail financiers to these SMEs. So the product for individual is really on the investment structures, right? So this is I would say the most interesting Islamic finance instrument for fixed income, because it's a short tenor, typically 3 to 4 months. It has a quite an attractive yield of about more or less 14 to 15% per annum, compared to our government sukuk of about I think 6 to 7%.
14%.
So definitely, yeah,
Wow,
per
that's a
annum.
lot. That's a
Yeah,
lot. Is it scalable?
it's. Yeah, it is scalable. And I think that pricing is already quite competitive, right? I think other platform would offer more, like 18%, for example, because this is unsecured, and this is like SME credit, right?
Yes,
So
it's higher risk.
in Indonesia that's kind of the rate that is quite acceptable. But we have managed the NPL quite closely and in relatively safe manner as well. So I guess it's a combination of that. So that's why our funders trust us and put more money into us. So that's one product. And the product for
Just to come to stay a little bit on this point. So basically the way it works is that I'm an investor, like anyone, like anyone can I guess it's on an app. They go through the app
you
and they can choose where
that's
they
right.
invest. They see like a lot of different small and medium companies, and they can decide, all right, I want to invest, I don't know, $1,000. I mean, it's in rupiah in your country, so a lot more zero,
That's
or
right.
whatever. Like they can invest whatever they want. They decide which company, and then and the average would be the same. I mean, I guess it's different depending on the company, the return,
It's different.
and the risk
D
is different
depends
as
on the kind
well.
of risk. Yes, correct. So it's
Okay.
really a marketplace that the investor can choose, right? So I guess that's the model. And for the small businesses, definitely it's a new channel to get financing. It might be more expensive from getting a bank facility, but it's quicker. It doesn't require a fixed asset collateral. And yeah, I think it's something, it's an alternative financing source for this, a lot of SMEs, because the problem is a lot of SMEs in Indonesia are not banked, right? Like we have a huge gap of financing. So that's where the market is.
I guess all of those companies that people can invest to, they are filtered and they are checked by you, so that we're sure that they are, I mean, Sharia compliance. All right, that's interesting. How many companies on average do you have like available per month to invest to?
I think per month we typically have 900 billion divided by 10 million. Yeah, typically like maybe like 300, 400
New company who
projects.
new projects.
Projects,
Okay. And
yeah.
that
And
are accepted
sometimes
that
it's repeated, so we have
Okay.
a repeat clients also that have doing a lot of good repayments track record with us, so they're enjoying like better pricing for that also.
And people like, let's say I'm a user, but I don't have maybe I don't have the time to go through each of the 300 available projects that you
Well,
have.
you can sort it by industry, you can sort it by pricing,
Interesting.
by risk, yeah.
Interesting. All right. And that's the product that you started with. And why didn't you just keep that one product? It seems to be very, very nice already.
Yeah, I think it's also because the our users, obviously they're happy with us and they're asking for more service. I think it's good if I can also save my money here. Like if I didn't get any project, what should I do with my money? Like should I just put it there, or can I do transaction? Can I do this and that? So that's why we ended up acquired the bank and trying to come up with more products to serve our customers. And
Okay.
in the bank, obviously that we will offer the typical basic features of a bank. It will be purely digital, so mobile service, like we don't have any branch, and they can do transaction, they can monitor their transaction, they have separate wallets within the bank to manage their savings according to their objectives, customization, etc. They can also have a free transfer from our bank to other bank with quota. And we are launching a couple of new products also. One is the Islamic mortgage. So we're trying to be solving this problem to have a very quick approval process and also competitive pricing when it comes to mortgage. And then after that is more on the social finance. So it's a court product to individuals that really urgently need money. So we're developing these two products right now, and yeah,
So
would
is
like
it
to
like
help people get the same
micro
age.
lending? Is it like micro lending?
Yeah, it's micro lending but with no interest at all, so it's purely for social.
Okay, so this one is like the micro lending. I think that's very interesting. Maybe we can talk. Is this one is not built yet, the micro lending one.
No,
Yeah.
we're doing that. I think
But
different is a typical micro lending that has high interest rate. everywhere in the world, right? Because
In
it's highly
France,
risky.
microlending in France is very developed because you have a lot of big portion of the populations who are not able to meet the two ends.
But it's different. A micro lending is being lent out of the financial institutions or the bank itself. So what we're trying to do is peer-to-peer lending, like
It's
peer-to-peer
more
court. So it's more like helping each other's. Like typically, when you need urgent money, like you would ask your family or friends, right? But what oftentimes you forget that you have a loan, or these people forget to, or these people will feel weird to ask for the money back because they're like a nice friend or like the family. So I guess we're trying to fix these things with leveraging our banking infrastructure on collection reminder and also the credit checking.
But
So this is
and this
something
part,
new that
yes, and this part would
we
ha
have.
does it have a business model behind? Because you can't, if there is no interest, I mean, how do you finance this kind of product?
We do because we're a bank, so we can actually getting a new use case from this. I mean, that's the good thing. If it's an independent company doing this, there's going to be no money coming out of it, right? But since we are a bank, there will be more volumes and all of these things, so we can actually. This use case makes sense for us.
But it's more, is it like more like my question is more about like how do you generate revenues from this kind of product, from the peer-to-peer lending, if there is no interest and if people are lending to each other with and they just give back, let's say you lend like $500 or euros, so the guy has to give back the same amount, but where is the how do you operate that?
Well, I think at the end of the day, as a bank, when people do more transactions in your platform, I mean, in your bank, then it will drive the volume of the transactions up and also the float and all of these things, right? And since it's a our bank has a card slash or wadiah jadamanah type of structure. Then we'll have more third-party funds in our bank. So that in itself is already like good for, because we need to build our balance sheet.
Yeah, but there will be some processing fees, I guess. I mean, you need to pay people to accept the land, or people have to
Yeah,
the
I
same
think
cost.
that's, yeah, I think processing fee, but we can keep it at a very minimum.
Interesting. That's very interesting. I think that's probably one of the for my opinion, at least in France and in some countries, that's one of the most important product for people, especially people who struggle to, with their finance. And there are so many people struggling with their finance and they need to go through regular bank and with micro lending with very high interest rate as well. But even if it's low interest rate, it's not good, but with high interest rate, it's
Yeah,
even
this is
harder.
I think the idea is also because a lot of people in India, as same with different part of the world, is when they need emergency money now with all of these illegal fintech lenders, right? Like they can easily get money. But the interest rate is crazy, like 100%, 200%. It's
Oh,
basically a
really?
digital loan
Wow.
shark. Yeah. So it's very easy, but then it actually creating a lot of interest and social problem and all of this thing. So very not sure. Yeah. So I guess the idea comes out like, what if we can create this so we can actually defeat this? People who charge like high interest to people because this is essentially like no interest there.
Yeah,
So
great.
I think when we talk about the use case, we also need to think about the bigger picture on how to affect the system to like ill, I would say ill elegantly put it back to the way it should be, which is according to the Sharia or Islamic principles, right?
Yes, and
So
also
when
the
you
goal
give
behind is.
loan, it's actually an Exactly. It's an act of charity. Like basically you don't get anything back, but Allah will reward you, right? But this thing is hard to do because there's no economic incentive for many people. But if there is something that makes the process easier, less hassle, and a constant, bookkeeping, so to speak, I think it will enable people to be kinder, to each other.
Great. Thank you, Dima. We are almost done with the interview. I'm going to start finish with a few quick questions. But before that, is there anything you want to mention? Maybe we didn't mention, message you want to give?
Yeah, I think I applaud a lot of Muslim and friends. I know it's not easy to practice religion, but you guys are really, may Allah watch you and all of those Muslims and I would say minority in their country that is relatively harder to practice. Really want to connect with you all. I know time and distance is the main hurdles, but inshallah, if I'm in Paris, happy to meet up. Yeah, I think at the end of the day, like Allah put different gifts and different strengths on each and every one of us. I guess whatever that you do, really cultivate that strength in the way of the deen, and inshallah, I think when the niyyah is there, Allah will make it easy. It's not going to be easy, but Allah will make it easy and so.
Thank you, Dima. So, Dima, for the last few quick questions, the first one is, what's the skill? What can you name a skill that you that is the most useful for you in your day-to-day life?
Good question. I think that's time management nowadays, especially with all of the things happening, is the most essential skills for me. The people management is another thing because our team has grown to close to 600 people at its peak. So people management, hiring, creating culture, sometimes firing, and the putting empathy but keep the professionalism in different cultural context is very key. And I think the last one is stakeholders management, especially managing the board, managing investors, regulators, some of the key leaders in the organization. It's sometimes not easy because bear in mind, when you're a founder of a CEO of a company, then you will be squeezed in the middle, right? Like you're gonna be squeezed by your investors from above you and your team from below you and your I don't know, regulator from this side, you're responsible to your family on the other side. So it's really a lonely journey. And, I guess that's the risk that you need to deal with. And that a lot of people basically can help you with that.
Yeah, I was about to say I can relate to that, not totally because I'm not in this situation, but I can relate to, being squeezed between different responsibilities at least. What's the thing that you prefer in your job?
I would prefer to, I think the creative side is what I like. The creating new product or brainstorming with others, with the team, with other people, setting up a new strategy, or just talking with stakeholders in the industry is what excites me the most.
Nice. Or do you have, I know you have very busy schedule, probably, most likely. Do you have routines, like things that you do regularly and that helps you to, rejuvenate yourself, feel good, get back your energy?
Yeah, I'm trying to be disciplined on sports, especially like cardio and running early in the day. And yeah, try to sleep earlier at night. and trying to squeeze some quality time with the family, typically like during dinner or a brunch after sending my kid to school with my wife. I guess trying to trial and error, come up with routine that can help me structure my day.
Interesting. Great. Do you have any book recommendation, something that you read recently, maybe, or that you find important, or that was important to you?
Yeah, I like to read autobiography. So the last biography that I read is George Soros. Forget the complete title, but I think George Soros, the last book about him. I think what I found very interesting about the guy is, I mean, we know him as a financier that kind of bankrupt the Bank of England and Southeast Asia at different points of times of his life. But I think he regarded himself as a philosopher. And I think the money that he has, he's trying to influence his mindset in different part of the world through the different social things that he brings, right? As well as to the politics. So I guess it's very interesting angle on money is not the end of it, but the influence that you can create with money. And that kind of obviously inspired me to do that in an Islamic way. So I guess that's something that I can learn from him and obviously do it in a more practical way.
Great. Do you remember the title? Is it The Alchemy of Finance? Is it something else, the title?
No, it's something else. It's the latest one. So let me actually Google it.
It's okay, Dima. We can figure out later, I guess. You can send that to me on WhatsApp. I'll add that in the description
Yeah, sure.
later, inshallah. I don't want to take too much of your time. Maybe a last question. If people want to follow your work, French people from the listeners, they want to follow what you do, and if they have any questions, they want to contact you for any questions. Is that possible, and how?
Yeah, I think the best way, I know like I haven't been really active replying in my LinkedIn, but I guess the best way is to follow the journey on my LinkedIn.
Yeah. Okay. I'll put the link, inshallah, on the description. I think that was the last question. So yeah, perfect. Dima, I really appreciated talking to you today. As always, I look forward to meeting you again, inshallah. Let me know when you come to
So,
France or in the region, and I'll let you know if I come to your region as well. Give salam to your family. I mean, if you need anything, please let me know. And
yeah.
yeah, thank you so much for your time. Mela,
Well, thank
put
you
baraka on
very
your
much.
project as well. I was thinking
Thank
about the
you.
dua, actually, I forgot. But Mela, put baraka on your projects. It's a very, very nice project. I think the consequences of what you are doing, it's not something that you can measure fully yet, but I'm sure that it's gonna have immensely good benefits for you, inshallah, and the citizens of in Indonesia. Having product that help people align with their faith is, I think, that's the best one of the best things that you can do in this life.
Yeah, thank you for the dua. Appreciate it very much and the support. And very happy and thrilled to be in this podcast and sharing a little bit about what I'm doing. Basically, the book I founded, it's a George Soros, A Life in the Fall. It's 2022.
Okay. Thank you.
No
Great.
problem. Yeah, look forward to meet with you, hopefully maybe in Paris sometime in the future.
Great. Thank you so much, Dima. Take care and see you soon, inshallah.
Okay,
Assalamu
inshallah.
alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam.